flat line. I just wanna flat line. Maybe this is all my fault. But I just wanna flat line. I just wanna flat line. Maybe we going too far. Guys, welcome back to the 10th episode of the Flatline Fitness Podcast. This is Joel.
And Garrett.
It's pretty cool. We're 10 episodes in.
I feel like it's taken us longer to get here than it should have.
It's taken us a lot longer. It's definitely taken way more time than we planned on. Today we're talking about hypertrophy and hyperplasia. Basically, how you put on muscle.
Gaining muscle size. Gaining muscle cells. All that good stuff.
Yeah. I think that this is going to be a good one just because... I mean, if you go to the gym, you care about muscle tissue.
Yes, yes. That's the reason you're there, right? At some point or another, you're worried about your size or your definition, and this is what we're going to talk about today.
Perfect. So we have two different things we're talking about. We're talking about hypertrophy, and we're talking about hyperplasia. So, hypertrophy and hyperplasia, Garrett, what are the differences between those two things?
All right. So, hypertrophy, we've probably all heard the word. What does it mean?
I mean, when I was first reading, bodybuilding.com articles back in the day, that was the term just thrown out. And I honestly didn't even know what that meant.
What's hypertrophy?
I thought it was a term that was thrown around just for muscle.
Hypertrophy is the... enlargement of cells.
Yes.
Right. It's the growth of cells. Not just muscle cells. But generally, when we're talking about hypertrophy, generally we're talking about muscle cell growth.
Yeah.
Right.
The ones that we care about today is the growth of your muscle cells.
Yes. So that's skeletal muscle tissue.
Yeah. So hypertrophy, growth of cells.
Yep.
And then hyperplasia is the creation of new cells.
Yes.
Or new muscle tissue.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about kind of like what we think on that, whether or not hyperplasia is a possible thing. I'm skeptical to some degree, but I know for a fact that Garrett likes to think otherwise. I think there might be research for both. It just depends on how you look at things.
Yeah, we'll get into all that good stuff. But I mean, first we'll just talk a little bit about, what they are, mechanisms for both of them, and then training styles for them, the application of it.
Yep.
How you trigger these things.
Yep. And I mean, to be honest, like, the biggest thing is just training. And it's like, if you can nail down training, it makes the theories just way much easier.
Yes.
So as far as hypertrophy, what do you want to touch on first?
So, do you want to touch on the mechanisms for it, like the training mechanisms? Or
yes.
You want to talk a little bit about the cellular process?
We can do both. I'd like to touch on the mechanisms myself.
Okay. All right. Let's talk about that.
So as far as the mechanisms, I think it was first termed by Brad Schoenfeld, who was the grandfather of muscle hypertrophy. And, I think in a 2010 research review, the big three are muscle damage, metabolic stress,
yes.
and mechanical tension. So what are those? You have mechanical tension, which is just force generated from your muscle tissue, like you pick up a dumbbell, you do a dumbbell curl with it, you have an axial there, you're doing a curl with your forearm, you have a point of contact with your elbow, and then the dumbbell, your bicep is producing force to move the dumbbell.
Correct.
You have metabolic stress, which is the buildup of metabolites. If you're getting a big burn from, doing a higher repetition set, sometimes you can feel that burn.
Yeah.
Usually that's going to translate to metabolite buildup or cell swelling. And then you have muscle damage, which is actually just localized damage of muscle tissue. So like sarcolemma, it starts to have kind of micro tears in it. And that actually can create an opportunity for the creation, or not the creation, but the healing process to enlarge tissue.
Right.
Those are kind of the three main mechanisms. Things go with that. So I mentioned cell swelling.
I even think of that as a totally separate one. Hyperemia, the cell swelling.
Yep.
I think of that kind of as its own mechanism. So like, I think that there's really four.
I would probably put it in there. So like, cell swelling is kind of like a fourth one.
The pump.
But they're very similar, like metabolite buildup and cell swelling, they're very similar. They're different, but they kind of go hand in hand in the style of training.
Yeah, I mean, those metabolic stressors, I think they obviously can cause some cell swelling, but also, what else can sell the swells? Swell the cells. You know, getting more blood in there, getting more fluid.
Which ties in kind of like with training styles. Yeah. I'll let you touch on that.
Yeah. I don't know. You and I both like chasing the pump.
I mean, we all like
chasing the cell swelling, maximizing that cell volumization.
Yeah. It depends on what we're going for in a session. I know Garrett and I, we love to go into the gym and we love to get a pump. It's a confidence builder. You look good. You see yourself in the mirror. And it just feels nice. Like, it just does. Like, if you talk about Arnold loved the pump. That's what kept him bodybuilding. However, that's not everything.
No.
Muscle damage and mechanical tension are things you need to pay attention to.
Exactly.
So, manipulating what's called the strength curve. You know, I kind of mentioned doing a dumbbell curl.
Mm-hmm.
You have the top end, mid range, and then the bottom end range of motion for that movement. And your muscle is going to feel different tension at different parts of the movement.
Yep.
So learning to manipulate range of motion, like when you're having a static hold mid curl, that's where it's going to fight gravity the most. At the top and end range of the motion, it's not going to be quite as stimulated as it would like mid range.
That's why I love throwing a band on movements like that. The top of the range of motion where you don't normally. It's phenomenal.
I think bands and chains are actually something that are really underrated sometimes.
I agree. Yeah.
I kind of wish we had chains at our gym.
I know. Yeah, that'd be nice.
They're just not cheap.
No,
not cheap whatsoever.
And there's people out there that say, "Oh, bands don't work." Yeah. Okay. Whatever.
Do you want to kind of touch on, so I kind of read up a little bit on hypoxia.
Mm-hmm.
So just the lack of oxygen.
Deoxygenation of the cells.
Yes. So that also ties in with getting a pump or the burn.
Yes.
So whenever you have a lack of oxygen in circulation, it creates somewhat of an acidic environment.
Yes.
So lactate buildup is huge during that. Things like ATP generation.
Yeah. And that just initiates a whole cascade of hormonal adaptations in the muscle cell.
Yep. You got testosterone growth hormone,
yep,
things like that, that are acutely raised when you have an environment like that.
And that leads to better nutrient utilization and uptake for, you know, cell and muscle growth.
Gosh. You can think of so many things that are happening at once while you're in the gym. I never think about it while I'm working out.
No, you're just looking in the mirror, just getting a pump on, you know.
but there's a lot going on. Mm-hmm. You got sodium potassium pumps going to deliver electrolytes, and things like fluid balance. There's a lot going on at once. But when it comes to, I guess, training styles, you can simplify it a little bit more that way. Mm-hmm. Because the nitty-gritty science doesn't matter that much when you're in the gym.
No.
It's nice to have
it. It's good to think about, you know, thinking about causing the mechanical damage or the metabolic stress or the hyperemia. You know, because all of these, at the end of the day, they're triggering a response in your muscle cells, an adapt or die response, you know? Where the cell swelling is a trigger for growth or face potential cell death.
Right. It's either grow or die.
Yeah.
And then that comes to, you know, muscle protein synthesis. If you're not having the right diet to support the damage or the stress that your muscle cells are undergoing, then you're not going to repair and you're not going to grow.
What we break down, we must build up.
Yes. So, I mean, I'm not going to go through this without touching on diet. Like, if you're not having an optimal amount of protein, you're not going to grow.
You can't rebuild those cells.
You've got to be able to grow from diet.
We're breaking them down. That's what we're doing. We're destroying those muscle cells.
So you can have all the training in the world, and you got to manipulate training protocol, but at the same time, if you're not eating enough protein, it's not going to be there.
Yeah, there's two requirements there that must be met.
As far as hypertrophy, I also think about type 2 and type 1 fibers.
Yeah.
You got different rep ranges. You've got power, you've got strength, endurance,
mm-hmm,
different phases for different types of tissue that are recruited. I think when I'm going through a training session or setting up a training block, I try to incorporate all kinds of rep ranges, movement patterns, things like that. Like, I think it's, if you don't have compound movements in your training program, you're just not going to see the muscle gain that you should. Learning to manipulate type 2.
Especially those type 2 oxidative or the type 2A.
Yep.
Those they're bigger. They are. They're bigger cells.
They're huge.
So if you train, because you can train, so people are genetically predisposed to having different muscle type or fiber variations, right? Joel might have had a genetic predisposition for more type 1 than me. I know I'm a very fast twitch person.
Yes.
I have a lot of type 2 muscle fibers, I've always have, but you can maximize that through training, right?
Absolutely.
And so these training variations that cause hypertrophy, they're also triggering your body to turn your type 1 muscle fiber cells into type 2 muscle fiber cells, right? And so you can train for fast twitch and give yourself a better chance to make your muscles bigger.
Yes.
Just making the cells different, a different typing, right? Yep.
Like, for me, I know my biggest weak point is that it's weakness. I think I adapt to higher volume training really well,
mm-hmm.
like higher reps, higher sets. But as far as like strength movements, like my bench press is something I'm going to focus on someday. Yeah. I'm going to really focus on my bench press. My squat and my deadlift are okay, but they should be better for how heavy I am. So I think learning to point out your weaknesses, like for Garrett, like he's so strong. But I know for a fact that he likes to focus on utilizing things like a pump. Whenever you're using kind of that metabolic stress technique to get a muscle burn or cell swelling, or hyperemia or something, like you're trying to create an environment that's actually really good for type 1 in that case. It's good for type 2 also.
Right.
But in that case, I know that Garrett is kind of going against what is probably more optimal for his body. Like, he adapts to strength training super well. I adapt really well to higher repetition training, and I need to focus more on strength training. So it's, I think that does tie into training and pointing out your weaknesses and then focusing on them, kind of just like body parts. It's the same thing.
Exactly. And I've definitely been trying to incorporate a little bit more of that into my training, doing more explosive style in on the upward portion of a lift, whatever, if on doing explosive squats, dips, things like that, where I'm controlling slow on the way down and pop, explode up the top, try to train that, you know, those fast twitch muscle fibers.
Yep.
And I think I've seen the difference. I really have in the short amount of time I've been focusing on that.
I think it's nice to touch on that, kind of like what you're saying is tempo. I don't think tempo is everything.
No, it's a tool in your tool belt.
It
right?
is a tool in your tool belt. That's, you can preach that for so many different things in health and fitness.
Yeah, I agree.
But I think tempo is a tool in your tool belt, especially for eccentric portions of the movement. So anytime you're allowing a weight to extend tissue, you know, like a curl, when you're on the downward portion of the curl, you're going to be much stronger in the eccentric portion of the movement. So anytime you're extending muscle tissue, you can actually just control that dumbbell way better than you can when you're pulling it.
Exactly. In a concentric or eccentric, which one generates most muscular force and tension?
Muscular force?
Yeah.
Muscular
force. Eccentric.
Eccentric.
The eccentric portion,
your
muscle fibers produce the most force.
Yeah.
So use that. Train with it.
There was a training block that I went over one time, and I think it was Ben Pikulski. It was an eccentric-focused training block
that
he was talking about. And he was talking about having tempo of 3 to 5 seconds every rep
on the eccentric portion. That's phenomenal.
He would do, like, start with, like, almost like cheap reps, like, especially with curls, like cheap rep the weight up, and then control it 5 seconds on the way down. I think that's a very underutilized form of training.
Because you come in, you're super focused on the concentric, you know?
Yeah.
How much weight I can move in concentric, as opposed to how much weight can I control on the way down, or whatever the way up, if it's a pull motion, whatever it is, in the eccentric portion.
Yeah.
And I contribute a lot of my success to focusing on the eccentric. I do that a lot.
Yeah,
whether if it's a bench press or a lat pull down,
Yep.
What I did the other day on pull-ups, weighted pull-ups, focusing on eccentric portion.
Yep.
I think that's attributed a lot to my strength,
yeah.
if nothing else.
Yeah, yeah. What do you think is easier, pulling yourself up or letting yourself down?
Exactly.
It's yeah. There are machines out there. The Prime machines where you can load the different range of motion, and they have like plate loaded machines
yeah.
where you can overload the eccentric portion of the movement, and I love that. I think that's so awesome. If you were to take away what, from just that little spatter that we just went through, learn to control the eccentric movement if you've never done that before.
Yeah.
I mean, it depends on what training block you're going through. But I think learning to control the eccentric portion of the movement is super essential. And it's extremely muscle damaging.
It is.
And you're just way stronger in it.
Yeah.
So I also do, like, if you have a training partner, you can have a training partner like push or overload the eccentric portion, like on a bench press or a curl or something like that, where they actually force a little bit more weight.
Force your hands down. I mean, we do those when we partner train those curls on the preacher curl. You're forcing me on the way down, that kind of thing. And man, does it burn? But
it's painful, man.
It contributes to some serious growth.
Absolutely. Anything else that you'd like to touch on that?
On training styles, or on the mechanisms, or like that.
I kind of like to stick with mechanisms.
Yeah.
As far as mechanisms, do you think that there's something under that that you think is super beneficial? As far as like the main four, so I have my thought, and I have kind of.
Do you have a favorite?
I do have a favorite.
Okay.
Give
me your favorite, and I'll give you my favorite.
My favorite is metabolic stress.
Okay.
Why? And I think it's because you utilize, I don't want to say it, but like, let's just say if hypertrophy is at the middle of a Venn diagram or something like that, I think metabolic stress affects way more different pathways than the other mechanisms of muscle growth.
Okay.
I think there's more at play and more involved with metabolic stress than something like muscle damage. I think muscle damage is essential, but it's like metabolic stress. You're gonna have more pathways involved with metabolic stress, and that's why I like it. And I think that there's research to show that. I think I looked at two studies that looked at mechanical tension versus metabolic stress, and metabolic stress was slightly favorable as far as like results and stuff like that. Maybe that's also because you are able to get a little bit more volume in sometimes.
It's very possible.
I don't know. But I would probably say that's what I like the most as far as a mechanism. But that's also kind of like a bro thing to like that.
Well, not as much as mine, because mine's a playing off of yours and just going straight hyperemia, cell swelling. Yeah. Just because I love filling the muscles with blood. Because what is that blood bringing to your muscle cells?
It's bringing nutrients.
Exactly. Oxygen, nutrients, right? And it's triggering the adaptive diet response in the, you know, get bigger or go through almost an apoptosis and die because you're bursting.
It's a, there was a lab that studied lactate, kind of like in the response of cell swelling and stuff like that. That bathed muscle cells from a biopsy in lactate, and they actually grew. They literally grew.
How long did they bathe them in the lactate?
It was like a 12-hour response.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Are they that long? I mean,
they literally just bathed it for 12 hours. Like,
realistically, your muscles aren't exposed to lactate that long.
Oh, no. They're maybe 30, 45 minutes.
I was about to say an hour max before lactate is moved out of your... cells. So that, I don't know that I like that study.
It's interesting, but it's
if
like
if they would have put it in there for an hour, that'd be one thing, because that's realistic to your body's natural response.
I know, but I think what they were trying to get is like a compounded over time, your tissues being like, let's just say you go through a 2-week training block and you work out 5 times.
Okay.
Say you work out about an hour, hour and a half for those
workouts.
So you're
exposing it to a total of 12 hours?
Yeah.
But also not 12 hours straight.
Exactly. That's the one funny part. I think in theory, it's kind of cool.
Okay.
But at the same time, it's like, realistically, you'll never be able to do
that. No, that's impossible to do.
But it does show, I guess, the hypertrophic effects of lactate.
Okay.
I
mean, I agree that lactate does have that kind of effect, but it's hard to really say that, oh yeah, 12 hours straight is comparable to the 30-minute response that you get.
Yeah, it's nothing in like your body. And I think that's why there's other mechanisms of muscle growth at play. Right. And it's not just lactate.
No, I mean, there's a combination. There's the three or four we talked about, and they work in conjunction with one another.
Yep.
You know?
I think if we were to touch on one thing for training styles for hypertrophy, it's learning to control volume.
Right. I agree.
So reps times sets times weight.
Yes. Setting a set count per week, per body part. I'm huge on that.
And Mike Isertel says it the best when he's talking about weekly sets and stuff like that. Because it's way easier to track volume that way than calculating reps times weights times sets. And it's a...
Does he give a ballpark sets that he likes to...
I would say, for the most part, it depends on the muscle group that you're talking about.
Right.
Like, for, you know, smaller muscle groups, like arms, maybe 10 working sets for the minimum someone starting out weightlifting. If we're talking, like, bigger muscles, like legs or back or chest or something like that, like around 20 working sets per week.
Yeah.
I think sometimes those numbers can be conservative, especially for someone that's seasoned in the gym.
I mean, because how many working sets do we do on back a week?
Goodness gracious, probably close to 40.
Yeah. Just because, I mean, I don't know if it's just individualized to us, or because he's trained that way, or if it's just the muscle group, just how it is with everybody.
Oh, yeah.
It recovers super fast.
Oh, for me.
There's so many, I mean, there's so much to hit back there. I feel like it takes...
So many moving parts.
Yeah, I feel like it takes that many sets to really get the thing done in your week.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah. So if you were to learn to track something, track volume, and I guess to make it simpler, just track your sets. So let's just say you did a workout and you did 12 sets of chest. I think it'd be good to learn to incorporate more sets in your week over time. Like, maybe the next 2 weeks you learn to work up three more sets in your week. And then the next 2 weeks you work up another three sets.
Right.
Trying to progress in the total amount of sets in your week.
Do we just progress like this forever and ever?
Then it comes down to recovery.
Is there maximal recoverable volume that we're looking at?
So... Brad Schoenfeld has a recent study out that tested...
MRV?
MRV.
Really?
That tested MRV, and they didn't really see any sort of degradation of progress, like, at 40 working sets per muscle group, which is a ton of
volume.
That's
a lot, yeah.
That's a high end for even competitive bodybuilders at some point.
Yeah.
And they didn't see any sort of take back or drop in numbers or anything like that, but they did... see just a minor increase as far as gains, but they didn't see any sort of like diminishing returns or anything like that. So your body can adapt to quite a high amount of training volume. But who's to say, so it was a 12-week study, if they kept going and they went past that for a certain amount of time, I'm sure that they would reach some sort of overtraining.
Overreaching, overtraining.
So, at that point, I would say maybe back off on your volume. It just depends on, you know, what's your recovery like? Is your training still going up as far as weight and stuff like that? Are you feeling strong? Are you feeling weak? So you learn to look for the right cues.
Understand your body. You know, at the end of the day, you can tell when you've been overtraining or when you haven't been training enough.
You can
tell. Once you've been doing it for a while, your body will tell you, right? Listen to your body. It's telling you you're tired or fatigued for a reason. You feel more energized for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
Listen to that. Use it. Adapt to it.
Yeah. If you learn to just listen to your body, like Garrett says, then you're going to be able to, make notes of how you responded certain days.
Oh, yeah. Joel and I know when we're done with the workout. We look at each other and
we're toast.
I'm super fatigued. Like, this is it. I probably hit MRV for the day.
Yeah.
You know?
It's if you feel like, you know, you're an hour into your workout and you're getting to that point of where like you feel like you got nothing left, you probably do have nothing left. Or if you're really trying to chase gains, maybe you take like an intra workout carb and get a few more sets in.
Yeah.
Like today, I had a protein bar. I was feeling pretty hungry mid-workout, so I went out and got a protein bar. So yeah, I mean, just listen to your body. I think two things, like we just talked a little bit of science, but two things I think is learning to calculate volume and listen to your body.
Yes, I agree.
I think those are two huge things. Would you like to touch on anything else as far as that?
Okay. Well, just I gotta pose a question to you.
Okay.
Pose a question. Okay. For hypertrophy, minimum effective dose or maximal recoverable volume?
I like MRV.
You do? Okay.
I would say there are some scientists that like minimum effective dose.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of like to push my body and see what I got, and I love that grind.
Okay.
I do. I think minimum effective dose, sure, you can get the dose response of, let's say, minimum effective dose for Garrett is 18 sets. Let's say we don't know what his maximum recoverable volume is, but it's like 32, 36 sets. I would rather him try and go for that MRV than stay at the minimum effective dose. Just because there is research to suggest that if you push that limit a little bit, that you're going to see more results.
Yep.
However much that result is, it's going to be more. Yep. It's better than just the minimum effective dose. However, if someone is new to training, Garrett's been training for a long time. If someone's new to training, I might be a little bit more conservative.
And go for the minimum effective dose.
It might go for that for like maybe a month or two.
Yeah, I mean, for whenever you take on a new client, what are you more likely to do?
Yeah, you're going to be more cautious. Dose. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. And then as they progress, you start going more into maximal recoverable volume, which I personally try to reach towards, you know, MRV. In theory, my hypothetical tells me that minimum effective dose is best, right?
Yeah.
Because you're getting the best bang for your buck.
Yeah.
But it's hard to calculate that.
It really is.
It's also hard to calculate MRV, but I can at least tell me when, I can at least know when my body's getting to that point.
Yes.
As opposed to minimum effective dose. I'm like,
you're kind of guessing.
Really, I don't really know. Do I need to stop? Do I need to do more? I'm not sure.
It's individualized. Like, everyone adapts differently. And I think everyone can adapt to training differently. So it's, I totally stand by exactly what you just said. And I think if you were to take away from maybe that little confusing conversation, is that I would rather you try and push yourself a little bit further than be conservative and try and train less.
Right.
Jeff Nippert was the last person that I listened to talk about a research study that looked at intensity. And that's a variable that sometimes isn't always in studies, but
it's hard because it's hard to track, right?
It is hard to track.
You can test it with or track it with RPE, right?
Yes.
But someone else's RPE is rate of perceived exertion, right? It's a scale.
Like scale of 1 to 10, 10, I can barely move one rep.
Someone else's 7 might be different than my 7.
Yeah.
Right. It's hard to track, you know, intensity.
Yes.
So I understand that.
He was looking at a study that gave people participating a fixed rep range and said, here, aim for this rep range. And then they said, hey, let's not give you a rep range. And then they were able to push usually 4 or 5 extra reps with a given weight. So it's like people stop short all the time. And I think intensity is something that's lacking in so many different things.
Yeah.
Like, even if you got those 32 sets in a week, were they hard sets? I sure hope they were hard sets.
Exactly.
You got to learn to push yourself. I'd probably say that's my last thing to add on to, I guess, training for hypertrophy.
Right.
There's a lot of different ways you can achieve hypertrophy.
Oh, there's a ton of different techniques, right? And it you need to alternate all the time, right?
Yeah.
You have to adapt, or you have to adapt your training.
Yeah.
So your body doesn't adapt and you don't plateau, right?
Yeah.
there's a bunch of different ways to do it. A bunch of different training styles, you know? Mix in isometrics, eccentric holds, drop sets, myo reps, blood flow restriction, you know?
Ooh, blood flow restriction. That just types in a hyperemia.
Yeah, right, you're welcome for that.
Yeah, blood flow restriction training. I do like blood flow. I want to touch on frequency. I meant to touch on that. Yeah. I think frequency is super important. You'll see people
how many times a week to train
a certain muscle group. You'll see guys do a bro split for forever, and you know you can get results doing a bro split. What I mean bro split, I mean hitting a muscle group once a week.
Yeah.
I think what's optimal and what's best in research is 2 times a week per muscle group, because research shows that your tissue does recover, you know, within 48 to 72 hours. So if we're looking at that kind of response, I think research shows that even if you had the same amount of volume but you split it up between 2 workouts, it's going to be better than just getting it all in 1 workout. So learning to maybe hit chest 2 times a week, bump it up to 3 times a week if it's a severely lacking body part. I trained chest 4 times a week at one point. Of course, my volume wasn't ridiculous, but I just had my frequency really high. So if you have lagging body parts, I would increase frequency before doing anything else, probably.
I agree.
What you think?
I'm on board. Yep.
You want to move on to hyperplasia?
Let's.
Or do you want to keep touching on hyperplasia?
No. Let's talk a little bit about hyperplasia, and we can talk about the little bit of the cellular processes of both of them, because they're both tied in together.
They are.
So.
I'll let you tie in and talk about satellite cells and stuff if you want.
Okay. Yeah. So hyperplasia is the
creation
of new muscle fibers, right? So how do we do that? How do we trigger this, right? In theory, there's not a lot of data on it. There's not a lot of data on it. So in theory, is it possible?
Yeah. Well, right? We do see it in animals, which is
interesting. It has shown up in animal testing, right?
Yes.
There's a lot of advocates for it that say it can't be done. Here's how you do it. There you go. Yeah. And because he's one of
them. So he was looking at a study that actually looked at birds or fowl, and they put tension on their wings and actually attached weights to their wings, which put their wing tissue in a stretched position for a really long time.
Right.
Realistically, you can't have that much tension over time like they put on the birds. Especially in a workout.
Right.
So they I don't remember how long it was, but it was for a long time that they had these wings under tension. Mm-hmm. It was a stretch on the tissue. So some people do use a technique called intraset stretching. So you finish a set, but after the set is done, you let your tissue go to the stretched position. Like a bicep curl, you have it all the way extended.
You let the weight extend your arm and you hold it in that position.
Yep. If you're training your chest, you're in a stretched position on a chest
fly, yep.
There's a lot of different techniques for that. And
my favorite's for calves, for sure.
Oh, man, it's definitely calves. That's the worst burn you'll ever have in your life. So I think that there's good data to it, and we actually got a recent study earlier this year that came out on intraset stretching and showed that the group that used intraset stretching did see more gains.
Yeah.
Was that hyperplasia?
Or hypertrophy.
Or hypertrophy. Who knows?
Did they not do a muscle biopsy on
that? They did do muscle biopsy. They didn't note anything like hyperplasia or anything that happened. But they did notice increased gains in the people that were using intraset stretching.
Right.
So I think that is a good tool in your tool belt. I do.
And, I mean, the intraset stretching, right, I think it triggers more of the fiber splitting, right, that we see as a mechanism for mechanical damage and things like that.
Yep, absolutely.
And that triggers a greater activation and proliferation of the satellite cells, right?
I was waiting for you to touch on satellite cells.
I know. Well, I mean, they become more active when the muscles are damaged and injured, and you would think an intraset stretching after you've done a set would cause more muscle damage, right?
Yep.
More mechanical damage.
Yeah, absolutely.
In my mind, that's how I make sense of hyperplasia. You know, it has to be a thing.
If it can happen in animals, it's... So we go through life, right? Mm-hmm. We get to a point and there's hyperplasia through life. But It's like once you reach a certain point, are you going to adapt to training that way?
Right.
I don't know. I don't know what I think of myself. I
think it's another tool in the tool belt, right?
I think the style of training for intraset stretching is great. I think it's super painful, and regardless, I feel like I'm doing something. But there's not any research to suggest that hyperplasia can happen in humans.
Hey, maybe there will be.
Maybe there will be. Who's to say that it's not happening?
Yeah. Maybe I can try to give it a shot whenever I start my research here in about a year.
So, interesting thing, and I told him I'd mention his name in the podcast today, but Matt brought up a point today when we were talking at work, and he was talking about individual response for people that are like anorexic or super petite or something like that, and they're adapting to training, and they're going through really strenuous training at the beginning of, you know, their training years or something like that. Is it possible for someone that's underfed or malnourished or something like that to, hyper-recover in a way to create new cells through hyperplasia, you know? I don't know. I think that's a pretty cool theory to put out there.
Interesting, yeah.
Because if you look on Instagram, there are people that have gone from anorexic, be it male or female, and have incredible gains now. So it's hard for me to see that and not think that there was some sort of hyperplasia occur. Because I've seen some pretty impressive physique girls that were anorexic before, and the size difference is incredible.
Yep. I've been there personally.
Yeah.
Right.
True.
Four years ago, I was 139, 140 pounds. I didn't eat. Little bitty, bird-chested dude.
Yeah.
I mean, I had trained before, but I went through a period of time, right, where I did not eat.
Yeah.
Right? I didn't eat. I was small. I was skinny. And then I found the gym, right?
Yeah.
I refound something to commit my time to. And so there's no, you just can't tell me, right, that all my muscle growth has just purely been from hypertrophy, right? There's been too much of a size gain,
right,
for it to be just hypertrophy. There has to be a creation of new cells. Those satellite cells had to have been activated. They had to have attached to the active cells and added their nuclei to those and split off into new cells. Had to have.
Had to?
Had to.
Are you sure?
There's just no way in my mind that it makes sense that they couldn't have.
I think that from like a case study or personal standpoint, we can use you, we can use people on Instagram and say that, you know, we can theorize that it is possible.
Right.
And I think that sometimes it does occur, we just don't know. Maybe we haven't had participants that have undergone it themselves.
Yeah.
Especially because sometimes I think training protocols don't incorporate things like intensity. I do think that's true.
Right.
And I think maybe sometimes those training protocols aren't enough to augment such a response. So if we were to, you know, have an anorexic person, put them on an intense training protocol and see what happens over like 32 weeks, I bet we could find some more data, but that's also an expensive study.
Right. Yes, it is. It's tough to do, and I understand why there hasn't been a lot of research on it.
Yeah.
Why there's not a lot of data out there.
But and muscle biopsies are painful and expensive.
Nobody wants to do a muscle biopsy. Nobody wants to get a cross-sectional area of their muscle removed.
No.
Right. Dude. I mean, it's small, but also like it's
super
not,
painful.
Yeah.
Super painful.
It's not a not fun.
Yeah. I've enjoyed this little banter. You got anything else you want to add for him? What are our ending thoughts for hypertrophy and hyperplasia?
Which one? I got thoughts for both.
Let's start with hypertrophy ending thoughts.
All right. So, hypertrophy. It's obviously very doable.
Oh, hypertrophy is easy if you're consistent.
Anybody can do it.
Anybody can build muscle.
Like Joel said, commit to tracking your sets. Watch your intensity, right?
Yep.
Listen to your body.
I think listen to your body, track weekly sets, intensity, and frequency. those four things. Intensity, frequency, listen to your body, weekly sets. Learn to increase those and pay attention to your body. Like, those are the biggest things for hypertrophy. And then, of course, nutrition. I'd say from a non-training perspective.
Yeah. I was just talking about the training aspects of it. But, anything that triggers the satellite cells becoming active is going to do it. True.
From a non-training perspective.
And for those of you who don't know, satellite cells are like a myogenic stem cell.
Yeah, think of that as like a trigger for so he said myogenic, that just refers to muscle tissue.
Yeah, so they become active, they donate nuclei to the damaged cells. These either add volume to the new cells, or they can create a new myoblast or a new muscle cell.
Yes.
Right. Which would be hyperplasia as opposed to the growth of the new cell, which would be hypertrophy.
Yes. And satellite cells are hugely involved with muscle memory. So muscle memory is actually a thing, especially from a growth standpoint. Like if you have built muscle before, it's going to be easier to build that muscle again because you still have those active satellite cells. So Garrett hit the head on the nail right there.
Nail on the head.
Yeah. Oh gosh. Good phrase. Hyperplasia. It could be possible. We don't have research to back it up. We do in animals, not in humans. I would love to say that it's possible, and I would probably say that's more than likely possible, and it makes sense if it's possible. It
makes sense in my head.
It definitely makes sense in Garrett's head, and he wants to fight for it.
I know.
Also, because when we're training and we have a lot of pain in our training sessions, we want to think that it's possible for us to build more muscle tissue. It's just a good thought to have. So I'll say that it's possible. I'm going to say that hyperplasia is possible. I don't think you have to specifically train for it besides intraset stretching, which in result will increase gains. There's a study from earlier this year that showed that. So intraset stretching, if you don't know what it is, Google it. It's a good technique. You got anything else you want to talk about?
I got nothing. Just change up your training styles. Adapt your training, or your body will adapt, and you won't see any results.
Yep. We kind of had a couple tangents throughout that podcast.
That's good. It's a good podcast. Makes for a good listen.
It does. Yeah. If some of that was confusing, let us know. DM us, text us, whatever. But we kind of just had like just some splatter on paper, and we wanted to talk about it. So just ask us questions if anything was confusing. Biggest thing, and you know, we preach it at work, but you got to be consistent to see results.
Consistency.
You gotta be consistent to see results. So be consistent with training and nutrition. You're gonna make gains. You got anything else for him?
Man, that's all I got. I think it was a good one. Like Joel said, if anybody has any questions, DM us on Instagram. Shoot us a message if you know us.
Yes.
If you got any ideas for future podcasts that you would like to hear about, please let us know. Anything at all.
Yep.
Give us a shout.
Yeah. And, this crossed my mind. I don't know about Garrett's mind, but, you know, possibly like a YouTube channel.
I would not be opposed. Right? If we had consistent viewers, consistent...
Yeah, y'all just let us know what you think, you know, like diet hacks, training, things like that.
Yeah.
Maybe just like... shorter versions of a podcast in a video.
Yeah.
So just let us know that. My goal is to get some articles out there for them. Start.
I agree. I agree.
So just to give the whole shebang, I think that's all I got for them. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. I know we enjoyed recording this one. As Garrett said, you got questions, hit us up.
See you guys later. Appreciate you listening.
See you guys. Bye. But I just want a flat line. I just want a flat line. Maybe this is all my fault. But I just want a flat line. I just want a flat line. Maybe we going too far.